spite of this, some students never allow such academically oriented predictions to influence them. A disproportionately large percentage of multimillionaires fit into this category. Those who did well in school and on so-called intelligence tests never assumed for a moment that success was predetermined. What about those multimillionaires who were not A students and who didn't generate high numbers on achievement tests? They never allowed the academic odds makers to dictate their performance in life. They recognized that creativity, hard work, discipline, and certain social skills, including leadership, were more significant than grades and aptitude test results. These are the people who confound their teachers and other fans of aptitude and intelligence testing. It seems so self-evident to educators that those who do well in their classes must go on to do better in life that they systematically have disregarded evidence to the contrary that has been accumulating for some time. This is not to discount the importance of an education in explaining economic success. According to McClellan, a college degree is a credential that opens doors to higher paying positions. However, he found that students with lower grade point averages in college eventually did as well economically in life as the top students. The results of my research on millionaires are highly congruent with Professor McClellan's. Grades received in college do not explain a statistically significant portion of the variation in wealth or income, nor do SAT results. The only noticeable exception were those respondents who attended medical school or law school. They were required to have superior grades in college and high scores on aptitude tests to be admitted to these professional schools. However, most are not in the decamillionaire category today. Usually they have net worth levels in the $1 million to $5 million range. So who are the decamillionaires in America? They are successful entrepreneurs. Most of these people were not A students. And most were not predicted to become major economic successes based on their test scores. Another problem related to scoring high on SATs and other standardized tests is that sometimes people allow their performance to dictate their choice of study, and ultimately their choice of vocation. For example, take Dr. R.A., the math whiz. She scored very high on the math portion of the SAT, so well that top technical universities expressed great interest in her. She was offered several scholarships if only she would major in computer science, engineering, or mathematics. But Dr. R.A. has more than high SATs and analytical intelligence. She also has a lot of creativity and common sense, and she is a people person. She is very gregarious and has many friends. So what if she scored a 5, top score, on the Calculus Advanced Placement Test? Should math and engineering be her only choices? Dr. R.A. wants to be around people and study them. Numbers bore her unless they relate to human behavior. So Dr. R.A. majored in psychology. Her main interest is in psychological measurement. She loves the program she recently completed and loves her career. If Dr. R.A. had listened to the guidance counselor who told her she should major in math, science, or engineering, Dr. R.A. would have been unhappy in those programs. The counselor just looked at her math scores and didn't give any weight to other factors. My data clearly show a strong negative correlation between job satisfaction and those strong mandates about career choice that come from parents and counselors because of test scores. Follow Dr. R.A.'s lead. Have the strength and the resolve to fight for what you want and need. Do not allow others to tell you what is supposed to make you happy. If you have a high level of intelligence, as predicted by IQ test scores, you have great capacity or potential. But if it's not used in ways that fulfill you psychologically, it's not likely that you will become a total success. Total success usually requires that you enjoy your vocation. Professor Steinberg says it best. Nevertheless, between 75% and 96% of the variance in real-world criteria, such as job performance, cannot be accounted for by individual differences in intelligence test scores. As for economic success, the logic is simple. If you perform well in your chosen vocation, you are likely to earn more than others, especially if you are self-employed. If you earn more, you have a great chance of accumulating wealth. This is especially true if you have the common sense to save and invest more than you spend. Investing, public or private? There's a lot of talk about the stock market successes that many investors have enjoyed lately. Is it the stock market that produces most of the first-generation millionaires in America? If you read the business and investing periodicals lately, you'd probably answer yes. But I have a different view about the creation of wealth, based on the data I've collected from millionaires for more than 25 years. Only about 1 in 8 millionaires, 12%, indicated that investing in the equities of public corporations was a very important factor in explaining their economic success. 3 in 10, 30%, rated this factor as important. Does this mean that most millionaires do not invest in stocks? Not at all. They just tend to be more realistic about the stock market than many other investors. They seem to view it as one of many places to invest their money. A significantly higher percentage of millionaires, 35%, rated making wise investments as a very important factor in explaining their economic success, as opposed to the 12% who gave the same rating to investing in the equities of public corporations. Millionaires make wise investments, but not all wise investments are listed on the stock exchanges. Most millionaires will tell you that investing in the stock market is not the only game in town. A significantly larger percentage rate as very important, investing in my own business, 26%, being my own boss, 29%, and willing to take financial risk given the right return, 29%. As expected, most business owners and entrepreneurs are especially sensitive to the importance of investing in their own businesses. 87% of these millionaires rated investing in my own business as either very important, 50%, or important, 37%. In sharp contrast, only 12% of these business owners rate investing in the equities of public corporations as very important, 28% rated it as important. Why so much love for investing in one's own business and so little credit given to the stock market? The typical respondent in this survey had an annual realized income in excess of $600,000. Almost all of this income derives from their main vocation as business owners, corporate executives, attorneys, physicians, and so forth. I often quote a multimillionaire I interviewed years ago who summed it all up by saying, "My source of wealth? My business. Any economically successful man doesn't gamble. I don't gamble. I worked too hard for what we got."